Welcome to
2 o'clock with Keller.
Bring your tea
and leave with more.
Hello.
Welcome to another episode. Getting towards the end of series 3 now, believe it or not.
Episode 27.
Wow. I'm still astounded at how many we've done and keep doing.
I know. I don't know how many we've actually done overall, though, because...
We must easily be coming up to 60, at least, because we did 30 last series.
I wonder, if we've done 30 a series, right, does that mean, like, by the end we'll have done 90? We need to keep an eye out for our 100th episodes. I'm really just thinking about that now.
We'll definitely have a fantastic episode 100. But anyway, that's beside the point.
It's just because we're thinking about anniversaries, aren't we, right now? Because
we are, indeed.
Elton John, his farewell tour, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour, whatever it's called, and playing his final ever show in the US, supposedly.
Supposedly, yeah. I mean, he's still standing to that. He hasn't done a show in the US since. It's only been about 6 months, maybe. Was it, what, July last year?
Don't know if it was actually live streamed or not.
But was it November?
It was November.
Oh, so it hasn't been very long at all, about 4 months.
No. I mean, he's still
going. I explained why he kept talking about Thanksgiving.
Yeah. It's just crazy how many shows he's done overall, because he was talking about, at the end, he was pointing at all his band's signs, and someone was saying, like, this is my 200th show, and I'm like, oh!
He was listing off all the ones that he's done, how many he's done overall, how many he's done in LA, how many he's done in America. Absolutely crazy.
Wasn't that, like, his fifth show at the Dodger Stadium? Which is huge.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely mad.
Yeah, because he said, like, about but he was talking to it then. Didn't he say he'd done like 200 shows in LA or something?
Yeah, and I was like, LA is a city, like, it's not that massive.
Which all add up to all his shows ever.
I mean, he's been singing and on tour for over 50 years, and he's still just as popular now as he was. Incredible.
But we'll have to pause our chat for a second.
Pause on that, and we'll move to what is going to be an interesting what we've been consuming, because I think each of ours are going to be identical in all the sections. Actually, apart from my reading, I haven't read it.
Hey Ella, what have you been consuming this week?
So I'll start with my reading, and then we'll move into our joined what we've been consuming. Reading wise, I've read The House at Pooh Corner this week, which was very sweet, and I did enjoy it. I think I've maybe potentially enjoyed the illustrations more than the story, because I think the illustrations hold so much, like, nostalgia and memories, and just, it's really, really sweet. So I thought that was a great way to spend an afternoon on the weekend reading that book.
It is so pretty, like, even just the actual texture of the pages, because it's all
so lovely. So lovely.
Did you find it a really weird experience reading it? Because I don't know about you, but, like, I actually never read it, or I don't remember reading it as a child. It's just one of those things that's more like you watch it on the telly, and like, or you have, like, all the, like, merch to do with it, you know?
Yeah, I didn't remember any of, like, the stories.
No.
They go through. I feel like you say, you remember kind of watching bits and having all the different toys and all the different, like, merch. Like, I remember I had bed sheets of Winnie the Pooh bed sheets, and I don't know, I think it's more just everything around it, like the stories seem to kind of nowadays take a back seat compared to everything else in the kind of Winnie the Pooh universe as such.
I didn't even know there was a kangaroo in it, to be honest.
Yeah. See, I remembered all the characters, so I think there must be something in the back of my brain that remembers when I was read them as a child, but not to the extent that I could have told you what any of the stories were about until rereading it. Big, big fan. But without further ado, before we go on to Elton. Hey, Kerry, what have you been consuming this week?
Now, let's talk about Daisy Jones and the Six. So, I think it came out on the Friday. I spent pretty much all of the Thursday evening just reading the book by Taylor Jenkins Reid, because yeah, I'd never read it before, and I thought oh, I do want to watch this. I would love to watch something that Sam Claflin's in, and it's got so much hype. So it took me literally till the day before to actually get around to reading it, and I have to say I didn't like the book. However, like, so I'd give that 2 stars, but I love the TV series so, so much. Like, that's definitely 4 stars at least from me.
I would agree, even after only like 3 episodes.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. Yeah. And so obviously we've been listening to the soundtrack. My favourite is the Honeycomb. What have they called it? Like, Look at Us Now?
Look at Us Now, yeah.
So that's like simple, like what we've been listening and watching, all one thing. But yeah, tell me, what are your thoughts on Daisy Jones?
I'm absolutely loving it. It's been a while since I read it. I maybe read it a couple of years ago, or maybe it was early last year. I can't remember, a while ago. Yeah. And I remember enjoying it a lot when I read it, because it felt very different, both in form, because it's written as a transcript of an interview. So it feels very different reading it. But seeing it come to life on the screen in the way that they've done it is just incredible, because I feel like you see that kind of push and pull between the kind of interview and what they're saying in those moments versus maybe some of the more actual real things that happen that you're able to see a lot clearer in the TV program, which you kind of have to assume a lot of through reading it in the book, if that makes sense.
I think the main reason I didn't enjoy the book, and I'm aware that I'm one of the only people in the world who didn't, I appreciate it, I like what she's trying to do, but I very much felt like it was a source material for what it was to become in the TV show, especially because yes, it's like a TV documentary, and so I prefer to just watch documentary rather than read it. It's similar to, say, like reading a play. I think you miss out on so much of it without being able to see it. Like, I think especially because it's about music, I want to hear the music. I can't feel it. Like, you can't quite hear the songs. I don't know the melody. Yeah. I think it's a really cool concept, the book, but I've just much preferred being able to see it, being able to hear it. Why I didn't really connect with the book, I don't think.
Yeah. No, and I 100% agree, and I think that's such a good way of putting it. It's like the book is a source material for this TV show. And I remember even when I read it for the first time, I was like, this has to be made into something for the screen. I was like, this has to be translated to the screen. It's written for the screen, even though it was written for a book. And like you say, it's so much about like the music and the band. You have to see it, you have to hear it, you have to be fully immersed in it, which the book can only go so far in doing, and this TV show has just knocked it out of the park.
It made me realize that one of the things I really enjoy with the book is all the description. I love it when they do all those super pretty lines about the tree swaying or whatever, and you get that in this, and I was like, oh no, that's so sad, I miss it. I like that, because I think when I read the book, I want all that extra stuff that I wouldn't get if I was to watch the film. Like, when you normally watch a film, like say the film adaptation of Jane Eyre, and I was like, oh, I can't believe they left all this out. Whereas with this, it's like, I feel like she was literally writing it, thinking like, okay, how would this work if it got optioned? But yeah, fair enough. But I think also the other reason I didn't like it as much is because of all the like paratext stuff, like on the back, like on the blurb, when it said about how like, oh, they broke up on this day, like why did they break up? And then I felt like the whole book was leading up to the ending of like what happens when there's a fallout, and in my eyes I was like, that's not really that dramatic. I thought it was gonna be like a huge reveal kind of thing, and then he didn't even fall out on stage, it just kind of got off the stage. I should have said that there's spoilers, but I mean, it says like on the back that they're gonna break up, right? So like,
and the thing is though, in the first episode they show a clip of that final show when he walks off the stage, and they say how they're like, oh, that was their last show, their first tour, their last tour. So it's not really a spoiler that they break up.
It was pretty much That's why I was like, oh, because basically, like, they just come off the stage, and then they all do, like, have their own separate arguments and things, but it's more so then, like, goes back to the documentary, and then talking years later, and like, yeah, so, like, that was it, and it was about, like, that's been anti-climax, so that, like, and also, I think that it's kind of, like, how with, when you text someone, you only get so,
yes,
like, you can't reinterpret their tone, and I always misinterpret things. I'm, oh my god, do I sound really horrible, and that's why I never put full stop in my message. I think, like, it's hard sometimes for your personality to come through with a message, so I think when you don't have loads of description and it's purely, like, just dialogue, like, the script throughout, and there's not as much room for imagining as such, I think I didn't warm to the characters as much as I do in a TV show. Even just say, like, having, like, Daisy just, like, smile to the camera or something.
Yeah,
I think it's just overall the text seems half done for me. So it's not necessarily, like, a criticism of the text. I just was like, oh, this is just the beginning of what becomes this incredible show. But that's me done with my criticism as such. But oh my god, I just can't get over the songs. I really wondered how they were going to do it, because I thought, I don't know, like, if the songs are any good as songs, like her actual lyrics, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how do you work on the melody? Like, they've got to change them a lot. Like, but they sound, because they're made to sound like they're the best thing ever in the book, I was like, how are they going to sound incredible? Are they just going to have to do covers and things? But oh my god, like, I mean, they haven't really done the songs. Well, they have done some of the songs, haven't they?
Yeah, they've done a few, but not many yet, because I guess they've only really just started to become a bit of a thing.
The music, like, there's so much we could say about the TV show, but I just can't get over the music, how I don't have the words for it. It's so good.
Neither do I, and literally, I've just been listening to all the music on repeat constantly for the past couple of days. Like, that is all I've been listening to. And it's just, I also can't comprehend how they managed to make it so good and it to sound so good
for a TV show as well.
Exactly. And it's like all the kind of extra, like, peripheral stuff to the TV show that they've done basically on this whole music side, the world building that goes into that, that adds on to this idea of this band being a kind of real band from the 70s, and this kind of, like, fake artificial documentation of all of this. It's just, oh, I don't know, it's insane, and I love it, and I'm just obsessed with the songs.
What are your fave songs so far?
Love Honeycomb. Woke up with The River in my head this morning. Also really like By Myself, the one that she sings at the piano at the end of the first or second episode. I really like that one. And oh, Regret Me is good as well. Enjoy that. They're just, yeah, big fan.
I made a playlist. I'll plug myself now. Called Mid March. And I was just going to put on there all the songs that I can't get enough of. And I put on there my favourite Daisy Jones and the Six songs so far, but some other nice 70s music, like Put Fleetwood Mac in that, obviously, but also Carole King, because I think it was the end of the first episode.
Yes, and they play Carole King as she's walking down the street.
And I was like, don't play that, one of my favourite ever songs. I was like, and they did another Carole song at another point. I can't remember which one they did. But I was like,
I know.
Yeah, but yeah, if you want, I can't move in Mad March. Oh, Going Back. That was the other Carole King one I did.
Mm.
There's some cracking 70s stuff in there. A couple of random ones too. But so my favourite, obviously Honeycomb, but oh my god, I love Please.
No, oh, that, his little like grisly voice in that song is just, it gives me chills just thinking about that song.
Sorry, can we just take a moment? I had to look up, I mean, I wasn't surprised, right, that Riley, oh my god, I don't know how to pronounce the surname, like, Kirk here, I was not surprised, like, that she would be singing, because, I mean, I only know her as being, like, Elvis's granddaughter, so I was like, fair, but Sam Claflin, okay, Sorry, what?
Did that come from? Where has he been hiding that?
I had to search up, I think, if that Sam Clarke been singing. I didn't, it's not even that I didn't think he should have a good voice, because, you know, like, I think a lot of actors tend to be, like, actor singers, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like how I thought he would sound. It's incredible. No. Like, it's rocky.
And then you get such a kind of different side of that at the beginning of Honeycomb. He sounds at the beginning of that song, and then him in Please, and it's just incredible. And it just, oh, it makes me go all tingly just thinking about him singing.
No, when I searched up, was it him singing? Someone was saying that he, every day in lockdown, once he got his kids like homeschooled, whatever, and he'd jump on and have this vocal coaching. And I was like, yeah, you can tell, because what you ended up with is incredible. Yeah. What, Sam? I don't want to say obsessed, because I don't want to become like too, you know, intense, but I loved Sam Claflin back in the day, right? Like, in say like 2015, right, we had like Catching Fire, I don't want to talk about Mockingjay, but we had like Love Rosie and like Me Before You. Oh my god, I literally had his photo on my wall, and my friend had met him at the Love Rosie premiere and got his autograph. And then I didn't have his autograph, but she like somehow did like a copy of it onto mine.
Amazing.
I love that man so much. And then he has still been doing stuff recently, right? Like, wasn't he in that Love Wedding Repeat thing we watched?
Yeah, he's been doing bits and bobs, but this is his first big thing in a few years, and He's still got it.
Yeah, and he was in that like other thing about like getting translated or something. But anyway, but he's kind of like fallen off my radar a bit. Oh my god, I'm in love with that man. Especially when I saw the hair, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, in his like,
I don't in know his interview where he's got like the blowout kind of vibe,
which also gives me When Harry Met Sally vibe.
And I guess the timing would kind of be right for that. Yeah,
but I don't know what to do with my Sam Claflin love. I don't want to turn this into like a whole, the only reason to watch a show is Sam Claflin. Because
if you need something to convince you to watch it, let it be Sam. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the acting from all of them is phenomenal. And especially in all those moments where they're not saying anything. Or they're singing with each other, like that first time that him and Riley sing, well, sorry, Billy and Daisy sing together, and his just intense staring at her, and you're like, you can read so many different emotions on his face in that moment, and it's just incredible. And then just the rest of the cast as well, all the other band members. And then you've got Suki Waterhouse as Karen being just absolutely incredible. And then you've got Camilla, also incredible. I mean.
Oh, and Eddie. Oh, yes. Hey. Oh, Eddie. Oh, because I love that he was in Poldark and he died very quickly in that. And I was really sad. So when he pops up in this, I was like, no way. He's like, Eddie. Yeah. George Whitehouse, yeah. It is such a good cast. Everyone is doing the most in that.
They really are.
And do you know, and now I think, so one of my favourite scenes so far was when Daisy and Billy were recording together on that one mic. Beautiful. And one of the things I really wanted more of in the show was the tension between Billy and Daisy, like that romantic sexual tension, you know, like, because in the book, obviously, like, it's there. But I think it's because like
there's hard to see it.
Yeah, because they don't talk about like anything actually happening. Like they almost kiss, but that's it. And so I love the TV show being able to actually see them around each other, to see their body language, and like as you said, how he looks at her. It's so exciting. Because
it feels like it fills in that missing gap of the book, going back to because what you were saying. Saying before, like being able to see them, to see how they communicate with each other in those moments where they're not actually saying anything.
yeah,
to each other that you don't get in the book, because that's not how the book is written.
Yeah.
And I think the chemistry, the tension, it's mm-hmm. there. This is going to be one hell of an emotional roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
It already is.
Yeah. And the really cool thing is that the camera can be like an omniscient narrator, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're restricted in the book, again, not a bad thing, to just purely the interviews.
Yeah.
And so it's all biased. But with the camera, now we're allowed to, like, when they do like the flashbacks outside of the interviews, then the camera sometimes it digresses outside of the actual memory that we're being given in the interview.
Yeah.
So we can see other bits that they won't talk about in the interview. Say, like, Billy would just say, yeah, like, I recorded with Daisy, but yeah. Actually being it, and then it wouldn't be like written, so we could see all those looks now, and I love it. Oh, and another thing. Okay, I feel like we should probably wrap this up soon.
No, okay, yeah, because I'm thoroughly enjoying this.
But Sam, or Billy, all the acting to do with Julia, his daughter, that is so, because in the book I really didn't like Billy, because I was like, I can't believe you do this to,
yeah.
I know, yeah, it that's really hard, you know, but I couldn't help it. I didn't like him.
Mm.
I can't believe he did that to her. But
he does come across as a bit of an arse in the book, for sure.
Seen how, when he breaks down about it, I've not seen my daughter, like, I wasn't there for 6 months. His acting, get that man an Emmy, because that was
off the chart. I mean, I will not be surprised if this wipes the floor with the Emmys next year.
I don't have the words. I'm loving this series so much.
No. Me too, absolutely loving it. I would highly recommend.
You can't tell.
Regardless of whether you've read the book mm-hmm. or like 70s music, it's just a top-notch TV show.
I love the theme tune. It's Patti Smith, right? Oh.
Yeah.
Good. And they have like House of the Rising Sun in it. Ooh. Yeah.
Just, oh, love it. Love it so much.
It's perfect that this is turned into a Daisy Jones and the Six and Alton episode, because it's that LA 70s movie scene, like Troubadour, you know, that's Alton.
Exactly. And that was a wonderful segue. And this was just a warm up into talking about music kind of originating in the 70s or even before that, 60s.
Yeah.
Alton.
Yeah. Alton the icon.
Out in the icon.
Yeah.
We don't need to summarize.
No, we don't.
Because it's something we haven't done before, which is watching a recording of a concert and talking about it.
How do you talk about concert? Because
I think we've spoken about the Ben Platt concert, but I think that was just in like a what we've been consuming.
Yeah. I don't know how do you go about discussing this concert, right? Okay. It's so much more factual. It's like a documentary in a way. You know what I mean? Like, I was going to say you can't really discuss their choices, like you can, like their choices of like staging to a lesser extent, or like the choice of songs order, like,
yeah,
no, it's not as, there's not as much room for us to ruminate about it,
you know? Yeah, I think I'm not really sure how this is going to pan out.
I think it could be a case of just showing the audience our process.
Exactly. Behind the scenes.
We take it song by song and just say, you know, like what we enjoyed about the song, like any like memories of the song we have, or anything we enjoyed like watching it, like audience reactions, you know.
Yeah, I know, because I guess we could kind of work our way through the set list and see what kind of comes for each of the songs.
Yeah.
And I think this episode is going to show me up as being less of a diehard Elton fan than you. I feel like your Elton fan is gonna shine through.
No, I'll tell you what.
I think you're a bigger Elton fan than me, is what I'm trying to say in a very long-winded roundabout way there.
I didn't know three of the songs.
Okay, that makes me feel less bad.
24 songs. Yeah. So I knew 21 out of 24.
That's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
That's so impressive.
Sorry. Which is quite, actually that was one point I was gonna make. Was overall happy, just generally speaking, I'm happy with the set list. And I, you know, I did quite like that. There were some ones I didn't know. I don't know, like, how, I'm going to presume they weren't big hits, the ones I didn't know.
Yeah. And I think there was definitely one that he said he hadn't played live
for
years. And surely that must be one that wasn't a big hit, but probably is maybe one of his personal favourites and one that he really enjoys doing and wanted to do one more time.
I think it's difficult. There's a, like, balance with all concerts between doing the songs you want to play or, like, say, the new songs you're promoting and all the classics that people want to see. Like, if it's your final ever tour, you know, he clearly wants to, like, do those songs that people won't get a chance to hear live again or their favourites, but he also wants to do some of his favourites. So I think he had a good mix. The only song that I really, really missed was Daniel. Obviously, I wanted Honky Cat, but I didn't think it would make it in there. But come on, Daniel, where was that?
I know that I was a little bit upset about that not being in there as well.
What did you think about the overall set list? Were there any that you were sad to miss?
Overall set, I feel the same. I mean, it was a very strong start with Benny and the Jets, which I know is a very unoriginal choice of being one of my favourite Elton songs, but it is one of my favourite Elton songs. And I feel like, aside from Daniel, all the ones that I think I wanted to hear, he played.
Yeah.
Tonight. And I think maybe it was Have Mercy on the Criminal, which I hadn't heard before, that I was like, I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah, I did. I didn't know.
Yeah, and it was quite nice to have a couple that I didn't really know at all or know so well.
I do think he did do a good order.
Yeah.
I'm correcting this, but anyway, because I live reacted. Well, I don't really live react, but because I sent you and George a picture of my reaction to each of the first five songs. Because then Mercy on the Criminal was number six, and then I was like, what is this? So my reaction stopped, and then I was thinking, oh, am I spoiling this? But then I was like, how do you spoil a concert? But anyway, when the first five songs, I was just, like, progressively getting more and more emotional. That was such a strong opening to the show, right?
And the fact that it was just song, and then song, and then song, and then song, and I was like, this is iconic. Because I feel like sometimes with concerts, you have too much of them kind of, like, fapping around, trying to say things, trying to introduce things. And I think he had a good level of being like, okay, we're here to sing these songs, play these songs, listen to these songs. And then he had these, like, little talky bits, and it was nice kind of as the concert got further on when he was kind of thanking all his band and his previous bandmates and all the people he collabed with and whatever. But such a strong start.
Oh, what a headbang.
I know, I was like, okay, let's go, let's go.
I was like, oh my God, I wish I was watching this with you because it was so, so fun. And I was so glad because I watched this as I was getting ready to go out that day. I thought, I can't watch this on the train because I want to sing along. And I don't know about you, I'm absolutely singing along, having the time of my life to the initial five songs because it was Benny and the Jets. Then it went into Philadelphia Freedom, which I love. And then I guess that's why they call it the blues, which is, I think, my favourite Elton song.
Yeah.
Then my older song, The Tiny Dancer. So it was such a powerhouse opening. And, you know, you have to start with something like Benny and the Jets. But then I loved it. Then it was like big hits, but some kind of like emotional ones straight out the door. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, because normally they kind of, they leave you waiting. They put the kind of sadder ones kind of towards the end and then pick it up with a couple of like really upbeat ones right at the end. But I mean, I guess that's why they call it the blues, being song number three. Solid choice.
Oh.
Respect that so much. Love that song.
It's my favourite song. I was getting all emotional because you see everyone in it, because I love, they had a really good balance of showing Elton band and then showing the audience. And oh, I love seeing them all emotional. Oh my God.
The audience were fantastic.
Was it in, I guess that's why they call it the blues? Or was it another song, an emotional one, when that guy proposed?
It was definitely one of the earlier songs. It was definitely one of those first three, and a guy proposed.
I think it might be in a Get Up for the Food Blues, because I remember being an emotional wreck and then I saw that and I was like,
yeah. I loved all the shots to the audience, and I loved the range of people in the audience as well. And I think that just shows you how and why Elton John is still so much of a loved figure and his music is still so listened to, because there was like literally children there, but there was also old people, but there was young people, but there was middle-aged people, and there was, and everyone was dressed up to the nines with their sequins,
yeah,
and just having the best time, and everyone looked so happy, and it was such a nice mix of people, and it just filled me with lots of joy every time they like panned to the audience and you saw like a couple of friends singing together or like a couple dancing together. Or oh,
I've got emotional now, like now that you've said that, I'm just thinking back to like just the effort that everyone went into in dressing up, and I love the costumes, like I mean all the classic like glitter baseball hat and all the glasses, but you know someone yeah. that orange, like the whole
yeah.
on the film yeah. And this is so cute, like people had that, like Neil Patrick Harris was there with his husband, and like
they I know when I saw them I was like oh
yeah, and I love it, all people having their arms around each other, and it seemed, I mean obviously this is curated, so you know they obviously wouldn't have shown any rowdy sections of the audience, but like normally a concert is super like kind of like moshy and not like the entire thing, but you know like it's not that much space and everyone's like climbing over each other, and it's very like people pouring beer on their heads. I mean, I don't know that that's like Elton vibe, and also I wonder if they'd filmed it in the UK, but at this show it's really cute to see, as you said, like people all different, like just such different people, and I was like oh my god, no way, like imagine bringing a child to that show. But and like people our age singing along to every word, as well as the people who maybe I like, would have been around for some of the earlier shows, you know?
Yeah, and it was just, that's so nice to see. And it just filled me with so much joy. Made me very emotional as I was there making my soup whilst listening to it and singing along in the kitchen.
I was like singing along the Border song, like trying to do my eyeliner, like trying to like, I was a bit teary and I was like, oh my god, don't you dare. I was like, I need to get this wing in. But it was, my Border song came one off straight after, I guess that's why they called the blues. I was like just hit me when I'm down. Oh my god.
And then was Border song the one that he dedicated to Aretha Franklin?
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned
that. Yeah.
Well, everyone who's not watched this concert yet, he does dedicate this to Aretha, because I didn't actually know this, but not that long after she covered it, and it must have done really well. But I mean, regardless, like, she's just the queen of just music, really, isn't she? And I think that did a lot to help him in America, like get that. Like just spread the word about his songs. And I mean, for because that was one of his earlier songs, wasn't it? And so for her to cover it at that point, I imagine how, I mean, he was saying that how excited he was for just starting out and have Aretha Franklin cover your song. And then he was explaining about how at her last ever concert was for the Elton John AIDS Foundation, and how she was quite ill at that point. And he's like, you don't have to do it. She's like, no, of course I'm going to do it. And went on and sang and brought the house down. And I love that story, because who doesn't love Aretha's music?
I know.
That's so lovely. So when I was that, emotional.
It made me tear up as well, because I was like, that's such a kind of beautiful, poignant way of honouring her memory and thanking her for the massive impact she had on his career and his music. Oh, it's making me go goosebumpy even just thinking about it. All of the emotions today, they're all there.
I just love when, going back to what you were saying about you know, what's the right balance, that show of how much they're faffing around and like chatting to you and that. And I do, Jill, it annoys me when they don't talk to you at all, like before I've been to a concert and they just like do song after song. Not saying like,
a little bit of interaction
sometimes. Okay, don't come for me the 975 fans, because I also love them and love their concerts so much, some of the best concerts out there, but sometimes Matthew will do like this whole political speech and I'm thinking, can you just play loving someone though? But it's all about balance. And I love it, you know, when you do all the, like, you know, being humble, like thanking all the fans and that, and like, you're so welcome. You need a bit of that. Like when you go to see them live, like I want a little something extra to what you'd hear on the album. I mean, obviously you get that from the performance, but you want them to seem human. It's really nice when they add in a just like a little thing, like you said, like I just want to dedicate this to Aretha. And I was like, oh, just like acknowledging the audience and now just saying little things to them. Otherwise I'm a bit sad. Oh, like, do you know I'm here? And so I think that he did the perfect balance of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. He did, he did. Oh, and I know this is jumping ahead, but when he brought his husband and his kids out near the end, that got me. And just kind of being like, oh yeah, I'm not touring anymore because I want to spend time with my family, blah, 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 blah. And then for him to bring them out, I was just...
I can't.
So silks and jackets as well. I was like, oh, it was too much for me.
No, I'm really glad that you brought that up now, because obviously we're talking about, you know, all of the thanking people, bringing people on stage. And that's such a beautiful moment. I absolutely love it. And I also love the moment when he decided he wanted to dedicate Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me to the band members that he's lost over the last however many years. Doc, what are you doing to me?
And building on that, his whole relationship with his band and those moments where he took to thank the band and get the stadium to cheer for each of his band members individually was just so wonderful, because there's no way he could have done any of this with them.
No.
And then he got Bernie in as well.
And also with the band members, he was saying about how, like, you know, they played with literally like everyone. And it's amazing that you don't necessarily like ever, like obviously like quite often on tour artists will say like, oh, I'll give up for like so-and-so on drums, but you don't like necessarily remember them all, like know them all. But oh, it was so cute that he was kind of doing a little CV for them. But also that, oh, do you know who my favorite person was, the percussionist? I was like, he seemed so happy. I can't remember which song it was, but and they panned to him and he was just smiling away on the drums, and I was like, oh my god, you're my favorite person, I love you.
No, that was so sweet. Oh, and I love it when they all look like they're having the best time ever. Because I'm like, that's what you should be doing. I'm so glad that you are.
Yeah.
Oh, I love seeing people happy.
Yeah, and I was glad that quite often they did pan to the almost the camera to the band, because okay, like I know this is a whole episode about how much we love Alton, and it was such a good show, and definitely recommend watching him. But to be honest, Alton is like, how do I put this? He's not like the best person to watch live. Like he's not like when you see Harry live, for instance, and he's bounding across the stage dancing, you know, because he's just sat at the piano the entire time. Obviously,
yeah, I mean, I'm a 70-year-old man, I can't be prancing around stage anymore. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, but to be fair, even like before he, like when he was younger, still, right, yeah. Like. Is known for sitting at the piano.
He's never been a showman in the same way that people like Harry,
yeah,
Freddie Mercury, you know, throwing some big names out here. But that's not to detract from Elton.
No, like, you know, that's just his style before me. And so all I'm saying is, like, it's quite nice that you can see that other band members who are a bit more mobile because they're not, like, down... tied down to the piano, to see them rocking out on stage, like as opposed to, I mean, I love how he always does his little, like, does his arms out, like goes towards the audience while he's at the piano, tries to interact with them.
It is really sweet, bless him.
Oh, actually, I was gonna say, let's move on with the set list, but before that, just thought I'd do a little shout out to the editors as well, because they edited this wonderfully. They had the loveliest shots of LA. Oh, I was obsessed with that. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was very well put together.
Mm.
Yeah. I feel like when you have a recorded concert like this, it has to be, it can't just be a static camera staring at the stage, because you lose so much of it just through the camera anyway. So you've got to kind of find a way of making it really immersive. But they did a really good job of that. And it was very beautiful. The shots of LA, the shots of the crowd, the shots of the band members and the stage and everything.
And so on to the next lot. So after the incredible five songs and Have Mercy on the Criminal, which you don't know, and then went into the classic Rocket Man and Take Me to the Pilot, and then a whole set of songs that the middle section, interesting. It was a bit slower, like, of songs that either weren't my favourites or that I didn't know now. So it was Someone Saved My Life Tonight, then 11, Candle in the Wind, which has been stuck in my head ever since. I didn't know this song. It was Funeral for a Friend / Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Down the Mission, which also I didn't know. And Sad Song Say So Much, and Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word. So that's quite a lot of songs there, just to hit you with another, like, seven songs. No,
like, yeah, I feel like it is in that middle section that it gets a bit iffy, and I wonder whether it feels a little bit iffy to us, because potentially, well, I mean, obviously, quite a few of these, apart from Rocket Man, Take Me to the Pilot, and Candle in the Wind, and Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word. I think those are maybe the more well-known out of that middle section.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the others, I'm assuming they must be kind of maybe personal favourites of his, or ones that he enjoys singing live or wants to sing live. And they're still good, but it's just I didn't know them as much. And it was in those moments I was like, wow, do I really know any Elton John at all?
I do wonder. Okay, so when he did Rocket Man, Take Me to the Pilot, I was like, hold up, like, you know, like, we are big Take Me to the Pilot fans. That was
I love Take Me to the Pilot.
Yeah, I love that. And what I don't understand is how, for instance, like, Have Mercy on the Criminal, which is lesser known, they did Tiny Dancer, then that, then Rocket Man. What I don't understand, this whole middle section, is why the lesser known songs were like all bunched together and they didn't spread them out. Like, I'd rather have had Rocket Man, Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Take Me to the Pilot, like, so that it's a bit more like, I don't know, I don't want to like disrupt the mood a bit, but I don't know.
But I exactly what you mean. I think it would maybe stop you from feeling that kind of weird, like, stagnant stopping point in the middle, which I feel like you're kind of inclined to when there's like a couple of songs that are less well known or you don't really know as well in the middle. It kind of makes you go, oh. But if it was mixed with the two, and I'm sure you could still mix them up in a way that wouldn't disrupt the mood too much. It seems like an interesting choice. I don't know who the musical director is, that what they're called, the people who put these things together.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, it was nice. It was looking at the audience and seeing, like, on the three songs we didn't know, that they were singing every single word.
And yeah.
When we got to Candle in the Wind, I was like, oh, because I knew, like, the two songs before it, but, like, they're not, but I don't know every word kind of thing. But when we got to that, beautiful. And they had the really fun video of Marilyn Monroe, or like an actress playing her in the background, because they had, like, the whole time, like, I remember with Tiny Dancer they were playing the updated Tiny Dancer video.
But
I just can't get Candle in the Winter, like, out. Oh my god, that reminds me, I was gonna say, I can't get that out of my head. And it just occurred to me that when I was watching it, I did not realise how many lyrics I've been getting wrong, because I had the subtitles on, so I get everything. I'm just that kind of person. And I can't remember what it was, but, like, did I tell you one of them? And why, if you've been in the first song, Benny in the Jets, and I...
In, like, Philadelphia Freedom, there was something, and you're like, I've been singing this wrong my entire life.
He is known for, like, you not enunciating incredibly at the best of times. And it seems to me that you lived a life. Okay, let's go on to the next. So before the encore, that was solid. So we had my favorite. Oh, actually, this is my favorite Elton, but only with George. But Brandy did a good job. Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. The our podcast is clean, so I can't say the word is back.
Yeah, the beer's back.
I'm still standing. Don't Go Breaking My Heart with Kiki D, Crocodile Rock, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting.
Absolutely iconic. I mean, everyone knows all of those songs. And that was another one of those where it was just banger with a fantastic guest, followed by banger, followed by banger, followed by bringing out Kiki D. Iconic move. Love that. Yeah. And then another banger and another banger. How many? Okay, I think everyone should just take a shot every time I say the word banger.
No, I'll be on the floor. Oh my god, you're so right though. And then it was, I looked at you and you brought out Kiki D, yeah. Because obviously your voice, it goes on, you know, your voice changes as you get older. And quite often is the case of like, as you get a lot older, your voice isn't, it's still fine, but
change, and you can even see in Elton's own voice how it's changed.
Yeah, and it might not be as palatable. I don't know, obviously you still sing, but so it was so strange, like, but in a good way, hearing him and Kiki singing that, because both of them sound so different now to the original. Super interesting. That was so I'm glad you brought her out. I was thinking also, like, with Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, you just can't sing this as a solo. It's George, but you have to bring someone out. So when Brandi Carlile came out, I was like, oh, that's cute. That was a nice duet. But it's just because it's just like a party feeling, like celebrating.
Yeah, definitely. And because I feel like if you were to have a party, those songs, okay, maybe you would end the night with something like Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. But the other five, you could just have play in that sequence and it would be a banging start to a party.
Yeah. I'm trying really hard to refrain from singing any of those songs right now.
Oh no, honestly same. I've got Saturday Night's Right for Fighting on a loop in my head alongside picturing the scene from Rocket Man.
Oh, yeah.
With that song.
Yeah.
Which I need to rewatch because all this Elton is making me want to consume more Elton.
Oh yeah, 100%. I just could not stop listening to Elton after that. As I was watching Philadelphia Freedom on repeat, I was like, let's go.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly onwards though to the encore, which I just love encores nowadays. They're just funny because everyone knows they're going to happen and they literally for like 1 second and they walk back on. They're like, all right.
I know, it's so funny. And it's a shame you don't get the audience kind of cheering for the person to come back on as you used to.
Hurry up, get back out.
Like, where's the shouting of encore gone? I mean, I say that like I'm not just like a 20-year-old woman, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, that reminds me, the show was so long because it's set like, I say, 24 song, which is
like 2.5 hours.
How long that he even had an interval? I was like, that's brilliant. Only Alison could do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he has such a big catalogue of songs. He's like, yeah, let's put on a whole long show for them. Like, I'm doing it.
And it's really nice that he was putting on these really long shows.
Right.
Because otherwise people would be disappointed that they didn't hear some of the songs. But at least this way he's able to, like we were saying before, play the big ones and play some of the ones that he maybe enjoys more that are lesser well known but are still iconic.
So anyway, for the encore, we brought out Dua Lipa and singing Cold Heart, and then did your song and closed on Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
It's not like a very apt ending.
Yeah, the farewell Yellow Brick Road or Goodbye Yellow Brick, whatever it is. Yeah. And like, because that song is looking depressing, but it's anthemic at the same time, and it just makes sense.
Oh, I 100% agree with you, and I feel like they managed to still frame it in a very kind of uplifting, positive way.
Yeah,
funny little like going on his little lift up to the thing of the stage. That cracked me up.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. I was gone. Yeah, that was so funny. Oh.
Oh, that's quite funny. I was like, I don't know if she really needed to do that, but okay.
It was funny looking how we had his outfit and everything else as well. And it took off his old like robe thing. Oh, brilliant. Go on, Alton. Love it.
Quite funny.
Yeah. No, but yeah, that was a brilliant ending. It's fitting with the name of the tour. And obviously, like, if this you're saying goodbye and it has goodbye in the title, then yeah. But it's like it's a powerhouse song. It's not like, I think it's really good. Obviously, your song is a lot of people's favourite Alton song. Definitely up there for me.
Yes.
I'm as good as your song than that, because your song's a bit like, because the ending like peters off, not in a bad way, but do you know what I mean? It's like a softer ballad, whereas Goodbye Yellow Brick Road is like strong power.
Yeah, strong powerhouse song to end on. So I think that was the right choice, picking that one to end. And not just because it was called the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour.
That was a Whistle Stop Tour of Elton John live farewell from Dodger Stadium. But you know, go watch it for yourself.
It's available on Disney Plus and it is fun, and I do enjoy, we both love listening to music, and it's fun when you have a recorded live concert that you can listen to. That's really fun and entertaining. Oh, there needs to be more.
I love watching them. I love, as you said, like watching Ben Platt's concert. It's so fun.
Yeah. And I guess there's a lot of kind of older ones. There's a lot of Queen ones out there, recordings of their shows, and lots of other older bands and things. But I feel like it's less done nowadays to record these live shows in the same way. I mean, okay, I know we have like streamed Glastonbury and Coachella and things like that, but that's slightly different.
Yeah, I reckon so. Yeah, it's a nice idea as well, because a lot of people might not be able to see Alton before he dies. Like, I'm not, to be fair, I actually, there might have still been tickets left to see him not too long ago, but obviously ridiculously expensive. So yeah. I'm glad that they, like, we could watch him from home.
Exactly. So we can still feel like we've semi-experienced a live one of his shows without maybe actually being there, which is the joy of the modern world, I guess.
Anyway, on to our blonde moments, would you say? Blonde moments. I've carried on the theme of Daisy Jones and the Six. Well, I actually, right, was thinking, obviously, Suki Waterhouse. And then I thought, Ella might pick her. So I was then thinking,
so it's okay.
Because then I was also thinking about her sister, Emmy Waterhouse, who's also blonde, conveniently. And so I was like, oh, Emmy, but I guess both the sisters. There's another sister both I don't sisters. Know who's blonde. But
I think she's classed as blonde, yeah.
Yeah, well, because Suki and Emmy, both actresses and models. But I was thinking, it's super cool is that, like, I'm pretty sure they set up, or maybe it was Suki or someone else, their own, I don't know, it was like their own designer brand, like, thing.
Accessories brand or something.
Yeah, because I remember seeing it on Suki's Insta. I was like, oh, that's so cool. I love that. So, like, more than just, you know, like, modelling. I don't mean like just modelling, but you know what I mean. Which is super cool. And also both of them, pretty sure, have like set up like work galleries. Could be wrong, I don't know, but it's interesting because like, it was saying that Emmy started off modelling and then like went and trained to be an actress at like Royal College or something. That's super cool. Like, I don't know, like both of them like starting out being models and then going off into like these whole other amazing careers.
And I think Suki goes on tour with some of the music he's written as well.
Really, Also with Suki, I remember seeing on her Insta, like, she'd released her own songs, and I was like, what? I was like, is there anything she can't do?
So, like, I know, it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, I mean, you think they've like actually been making a splash for like a whole decade already. Yeah,
they were like 16-ish.
Yeah. Oh, like, how? Like, how are you for real? So they're both of them. Super cool. And also, I meant to say, it's so nice to see Suki and Sam in Daily Jones together. And I was like, oh my god, like,
Rosie. Not oh, so cute.
Yeah. Oh. But anyway, on to your mom moment.
Really sweet. I was gonna go for Suki Waterhouse, and I was like, maybe Kara will do that, so I'll have a backup. And I then was like, you know who's somewhat an iconic blonde female singer who I don't think we've ever shouted out? The one and only Dolly Parton.
You're so right. I thought you were going to say Madonna.
Madonna. I don't think we shouted out Madonna, but I was like, Dolly Parton, an absolute icon of country music, of just music in general. And she was one of these people who, when she started out, she wasn't that big a deal. Not many people were really that fussed with her stuff. But come like the 90s and the 2000s, she just completely blew up. And even still to this day, she is just an absolute icon in the musical world. And she set up her own Dollywood company, which manages a load of entertainment venues. She's got a water park, which I was like, that's pretty cool. But she's also set up lots of different charities and things, including the Dollywood Foundation. I love the fact that she's calling these things Dollywood. I think that's absolutely iconic. Which manages a number of projects to bring education and poverty relief to East Tennessee, where she grew up. So I love the fact that she's another one of these great women taking the world in her stride and setting up charities to help people who come from a similar kind of background where maybe they wouldn't really be expected to go on to do these big things. So I was like, got a shout out Dolly. Everyone knows Dolly. Absolute icon. I've said icon about 10 million times, but I feel like that word doesn't do enough to encapsulate what she's like.
Well, I'll just say, this has made me think of two things. And one, so with her water park, I don't know if you've seen them. There's a clip from, actually, I think he was sadly around the time of 9/11. Graham Norton went over to interview her, and he was at the water park. And there's just a clip of them like going round on those, like, what are they called, the rings.
I know you like little inflatable things.
Which is, I absolutely love that clip. I don't know how I saw it, but love it. And another thing. Do you remember recently I sent you a meme, and it was, I think it was something she did on James Corden, like a little sketch, and they asked her, they were like, oh, Dolly, like, what about this, and she couldn't be bothered, they were being annoying. She was like, what's that over there? And she turned around, and they got someone else and did all this stunt, like running away, and I was absolutely howling it.
I don't know if she actually said that to me, but I'm going to look that up.
I know James Corden's like Loki cancelled, but search up Dolly Parton, James Corden, is really funny.
I definitely will. That sounds hilarious.
So Ella, next time we're back with a very special episode.
A very special episode, and you won't just have to listen to the two of us rattling on for an hour next week. You can listen to Georgina and Ella rattling on with us as we do our second Rocket Women Book Club episode.
Oh my god, look, the Rocket Man, it continues.
Oh, it all flows together nicely. You know how they tell you in essays you've gotta say something at the end of the chapter to, you know, bring it back to the new one? This is what we're doing in this. So it will be our third book club episode.
Yeah.
I think our only guest episode of this series so far. I'm sure we'll do more guest episodes next series, but I'm very excited. Kerry's come up with some great questions for us to answer. So, yeah.
Join us with book chat.
Book chat. And hopefully we'll all come away with lots of new recommendations of what to read and maybe what not to read as well.
Yeah, true.
Thanks for listening to
Tea O'Clock with Keller.
See you next time.